Sometimes when you see a bird you've never seen before, or maybe you've heard a call, and you may have heard it more than once, but you can't identify it. It about drives me crazy some mornings on my morning run around the neighborhood. I'll hear a bird song, and I'll go, what the heck? What bird is that? Well, today we'll be talking with you about an app that can identify birds by their sounds or what they look like, and specifically warblers. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Scott Whittle. He is the co-creator of the Warbler Guide app, along with Tom Stevenson. Scott has 20 years of experience as a professional photographer and educator. He's also the co-author of the book, The Warbler Guide, which is a great accompaniment to the Warbler Guide app. And Scott, so great to have you join us. Thank you for being with us today.
It's great to be with you. Thanks.
I see that you were a one-time New York State Big Year record holder. One of the books that I really enjoyed was a book called The Big Year, which you may or may not have read.
Well, I absolutely read it, and it was an inspiration to me, actually, to do that big year on a much smaller scale.
How many birds did you identify in that year?
Well, I had 350 birds for the year, all in New York State, and that was a new record for the state. It has since been broken twice, but one of the special things I did was I actually photographed or sound recorded every bird that I have. So it was a very exciting year for me.
Oh, it had to be. So that's pretty much about one a day.
That's about one a day. Yep. I put about 40,000 miles on my car, and just in New York State, and it was quite an adventure, and it was a great introduction to birds for me, actually. It was a great introduction to the state for me.
Well, I wanted to mention it because I think it helps establish your credentials for the work that you've done with your with the Warbler Guide book and with the app that you've developed. And warblers, what attracts you to warblers? What do you like about warblers?
They're really beautiful birds, first of all. I think warblers are, the New World warblers are really some of the most beautiful birds in the whole world. And we're very lucky to have this set of birds come through the United States every year. The other neat thing about them, I think, is they're sort of transient. So you have them in the spring and the fall, and if you're lucky, you might have a few species of warbler breeding in your area, but then they're sort of gone again. So you have this, enough time to miss them and then have them come back again. Plus, they're a very they can be a very challenging ID group. So it's a lot of fun as a birder to try and figure out what you're looking at.
And why are they so difficult to identify? It can be really hard.
It can be. I mean, one of the things is their behavior. They're small birds. They are often sort of obscured in a tree. They usually move quickly. But I think part of the issue is that our techniques for learning about birds and learning about their songs have been a little bit inefficient. And hopefully we're trying to correct that in the Warbler Guide and the Warbler Guide app.
Yeah, and boy, is the guide and the app are really getting some wonderful reviews. Some people are saying this is going to be a whole sea change in how people identify birds.
Well, I hope so. I think that, I learned on traditional guides. I love the Sibley Guide and all the other bird guides that are out there. The problem with them, though, is they're sort of like bird dictionaries. They list all the birds in a taxonomical order, which is a little bit arbitrary because it changes. And as people sort of learn more about birds, the taxonomy changes. But also, it would be sort of like if you wanted to learn English and somebody handed you a dictionary and said, here, if you read everything in this book, you'll know English. And I think that that can work if the person's extremely motivated, but I think that there could certainly be a better structure for helping people learn. So in our book, we have lots of information, but we also try to make it so that you don't have to read the whole book to figure out what you're looking at.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good advancement. let's put it that way. And the app.
I hope so.
Oh, and the app itself. Now, this is something pretty cool that you can have on your cell phone if you want, I guess.
Yeah, well, so a lot of people were complaining that they couldn't fit the Warbler Guide in their pocket, considering it's 560 pages and probably weighs a couple of pounds.
Yeah, it's a big book.
So we wanted to make an app, but we wanted, there are some bird apps out there, but we, what we wanted to do with our app was really take advantage of the platform, of the digital platform, and use its strengths to help somebody identify a bird in ways that even the book can't do quite as well. So some of the strengths of the app, I think, well, one thing we have, which is probably our sexiest feature, which is we're very excited about, is our 3D birds. Mm-hmm. So if your viewers, or if your listeners rather, go to thewarblerguide.com, there's a video there at the top of the page that can show them. But I'll just describe it. It's actually a three-dimensional model of the bird that's very lifelike in detail. It's actually very detailed. We've actually laid photographs of the bird over this model, and you can rotate it in any direction. So before we were saying warblers can be tricky to identify because they can be high up in a tree. Well, with this app, if the bird's high up in a tree, you can actually rotate the model to the same angle you're seeing the bird at, and you can actually use that to try and figure out if that's the right bird or not. So that's a really fun feature. It's sort of every time we show people, we get sort of a wow or an
wow. Wow, he's right.
Show it. So, so we're excited about that. And there are a couple of other features that we think are really great. One thing we've done is we've created a filter that allows the user to actually filter out what they're seeing by anything visual that they see. So if you see a black back, or if you see there's yellow in the breast or a white tail, you can put all that information in. In addition to that, you can also put any song information. So if the bird is singing a song that rises, or if you hear a bird that's singing a buzzy song, you can put that information in, and it'll quickly filter down to just the birds that have those characteristics. So it's really quite amazing. I mean, we can put in one or two, maybe three characteristics in there, and you can quickly get down from 50 species of warblers down to just a couple. So that's a very exciting thing that I think, particularly something like an iPhone or a handheld device is really excellent at doing.
Or maybe an iPad.
Or an iPad, too. Yeah, and the iPad actually has a really nice screen format, which gives you a little more space to work with. You know, and we're talking iPhone and iPad. We get a lot of requests also for Android that we're working on that. We developed initially for Apple just because Apple is an easier platform to work on because it has a consistent screen format and a consistent operating system, whereas Android has a whole bunch of screen formats and operating systems. But just to rest assure your listeners who have that question, Android is on its way.
Talking today with Scott Whittle, 20 years of experience as a professional photographer and educator. Had one-time New York State Big Year record holder and co-author along with one other person of his book.
Tom Stevenson.
Stevenson, yeah. I'm sorry. I just blanked on his name suddenly.
No problem.
Oh, my goodness. Of his Warbler Guide app and, of course, the Warbler Guide book as well. And both are available, and I think the app, which is the newer of the two, is almost what you'd call a perfect companion to the book itself. You may have questions about the book. You may have questions about the app. You may have questions about warblers or other birds. I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page, and our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show. So we'd love to hear from you. So give us a call, shoot us an email, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Again, we'd certainly love to hear from you. So I haven't seen any apps that are even like this at all, especially the 3D graphics.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we really, I mean, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
And we've definitely tried to build it from the ground up. You know, like I said, a lot of apps are good, but what they try to do is they basically just sort of translate the book onto the device. So it's sort of just the book in device form. And we really didn't want to do that. We wanted to put all the information that was in the book there, but we really wanted to make it very adapted properly to what a computer can do. So hopefully we succeed at that. And yeah, I do love those 3D birds.
Well, we have some callers online. Again, I'll let you join in with your own questions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments. I can tell you, you know, it's fun to go out with someone who really knows their birds. And in spring to go, I've been on a couple of birding expeditions with guys who really know their songs and how to spot warblers. And it really is a lot of fun. But this is going to make it a whole lot more fun because I can't be with those people all the time. You know?
Like having an expert in your pocket.
Yeah, exactly. They're not. Yeah, these guys are not running with me every morning when I do my morning 3 miles. I'm all by myself, so the app is going to help. Susan in Milwaukee, thanks for calling. And what's on your mind?
I have a question about birds that I'm just an amateur bird watcher, but the last two springs between April and May, usually the last part of April and beginning of May, I have noticed these tiny little birds. They're about 3 to 4 inches long. They're a dark blue, and they're very thin, and they seem to be warblers, and they come through the neighborhood here in Milwaukee. And then I don't see them anymore. And I was wondering if you would have any idea of what they would be.
Dark blue?
No.
Yeah, blue, sort of a grayish blue.
And they're all blue. There's no other color on them.
No other color that I noticed. And a black beak.
So that sounds to me like maybe indigo bunting, which is very similar to warbler in size.
Uh-huh.
But they're actually a bunting, which is a somewhat related group, and they're a beautiful bird. They're really a
stunning. They were really pretty. And I asked everybody I knew that
they're
was
gorgeous.
Yeah,
knew what they were, but nobody could help me. So,
go ahead. I'm sorry, Scott.
No, I'm just going to say, look up indigo bunting online or in your guide and see if that looks like the bird shoe, because that sure sounds like it to me.
Okay, thank you so much. I'm loving the show.
Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. I think you are exactly right. We have indigo bunting in this state, and that's about when you see them too.
That's right.
That's just about
The timing is important because like you said, that's when you see them. And actually, some birds migrate earlier and some birds migrate later. So when we're looking at warblers, we can actually sort of judge a little bit by the time, the date that you're looking at it and what's most likely to show up. In fact, believe it or not, they've already started migrating. And we have yellow warblers coming through I live in Cape May, New Jersey, which is this great birding area. But we have yellow warblers already coming through, and it's not even August yet. So our fall has already begun.
Isn't that amazing? I'm telling you. Scott Whittle, our guest today, he is the author, along with Tom Stevenson, of the book called The Warbler Guide. And now they've just gotten out a warbler app that you can get on your iPhone or maybe your iPad that is really going to help you identify these lovely little birds. Join in with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer today, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk today with Scott Whittle about his bird identification app and his book, The Warbler Guide, as well. questions, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org, or again, post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. And we had a Facebook question from Jolynn, who wondered about the cost of the app. How much does the app cost?
The app, I believe it's $12.99. It's right around that number. And so it's about half the price of the book. And so that's the cost. And you can get it on the iPhone store or the App Store, rather. You just go there and look up the Warbler Guide, and it'll pop up right away.
And that's so it's pretty, you can probably have one in the next 5 minutes if you want one.
You could get it right now. I encourage you to get one or two.
Why not? Oh, boy. So how this must have been a monumental undertaking. Did you do all the design?
We did a lot of the design. We had an app design firm that helped us with making the design as efficient and sort of easy to use as possible, which was really important to us. And, of course, we didn't do the programming of it. But we had already written the Warbler Guide, which had taken Tom and I about 2.5 years from inception to having it in hand. And so the app really only took us another year or so, because we already had the content, and we really just had to work out a design that really got the information to the user as fast and efficiently as possible and sort of was as intuitive to use as possible. So we spent a lot of time thinking about that stuff, but luckily we already had the content.
Yeah, that's amazing. Kathy in Reedsburg has a question for you. Kathy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thank you. I can't believe I'm going to whistle on the radio, but what bird makes this noise? Just like that.
Well, that sounds like it might be a black-capped chickadee, which is a two-note song. It's actually three notes. If you listen very carefully, the second note has a second part to it. But it's very typical. The other bird it could be is titmouse, which makes a lot of sounds and are often confusing. It's unlikely to be a warbler, because warblers actually usually have many elements in their songs and have a very structured song. So it's probably not a warbler. But I would listen, if you go online and type in black-capped chickadee or titmouse, try both of those and see if that sounds like the bird.
Okay, thank you.
I'm voting for the black-capped chickadee.
Yeah, I think that's right. We have Carolina chickadees here, so they sing a little bit differently. If we hear that song here, we get very excited. and actually, I love that she was asking about song, because that's actually another really important part of birding. Larry, you mentioned going out with experts and how they're so good at finding birds.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you noticed that half the time they're using just their ears.
Yep.
And I think that area is an area that's really under sort of studied for many birders. And it's an area that's been traditionally really difficult to learn, because there's been no real system for learning it. And actually, one of the things we did in the Warbler Guide, one of the things I'm most proud of is actually Tom, especially as an audio expert, and I worked on this system that actually describes sounds. So we have a way to talk about sounds objectively. We talk about how many parts a song has, whether it's rising or falling, whether it's buzzy or clear, just simple terms like that. Once you do that, it becomes so much easier to learn songs, because I can tell you that in my past, I've spent a lot of time listening to CDs of birds singing.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to learn sounds, and it really doesn't work very well. I've listened for hours and hours in my car, and the only thing that does for me is when I get out of the car and hear the bird, I say, well, I know I've heard that before, but I have no idea what bird that is.
Yeah, well.
So our system is really hopefully going to help people learn songs, because it's such a wonderful thing to know about. And I get a lot of pleasure going out and just listening to birds. And our book and app both utilize that system. And I hope that it helps people learn songs more, because it's really a wonderful thing to know.
I definitely agree. And I said this every morning. I said, I know that song. I've heard that song so many times, but I can't think of what the... of what bird it is. So
what bird it is, right? Exactly.
Very frustrating. So I'm looking forward to this app and applying it. Mary in Green Bay, it's your turn. Thanks, Mary, for calling.
Good morning. Last year, as I was weeding in the evenings, I heard a bird call that I don't think I'd ever heard or noticed before. It was a three-note call, and I was able to plunk it out later on the piano, which was a CCA. And the words that came to mind to kind of fit with the, what I was hearing was, yes, he can. And it had that kind of tonal quality of a blue jay, but I'd never heard a blue jay make a sound like that before.
Well, it still might have been a blue jay, actually. And I'm not saying that definitely was, but blue jays are amazingly variable in their vocalizations. And not only that, but they do have some qualities of mimicry. So, for example, you may have heard blue jays imitate hawks. And here we often get them imitating red shouldered hawk. In a little further north, they often imitate red-tailed hawk. And sometimes I think they do that just to sort of scare off other birds so they can jump into the feeder and get stuff. So they're very smart that way. But they're also very variable in their sounds. So one really fun site to go to if you're interested is called Xenocanto. And that's xenocanto.org. And that's a site where people upload their sound recordings. And you can type in a species like blue jay, and you'll get probably 200 recordings. And you don't have to listen to all 200, but it's fun to actually browse through some of those recordings because you'll often hear variations that you never heard before on a standard recording. So I would not totally discount blue jay for that one.
No.
Okay. All right. That's good. And my inclination was probably correct.
Probably right on. Thanks,
You're
Mary.
You're probably right.
Thanks, Mary. We had a caller from Minnesota, Jan in Minnesota, had to hang up, but wondered, is there a type of bird feed? Oh, here's an interesting one. Type of bird feed that would attract songbirds but would also keep pigeons away.
That's always a problem, right? I know, and house sparrows, too, can really just drain out your feeders.
Yeah.
With the warblers, actually, they are mostly insectivorous. So that means they're usually eating mostly insects. And although some of them can switch up and eat berries, especially yellow-rumped warbler, actually, is a really interesting bird because they can actually survive on, around here, even poison ivy berries and pokeberries and all sorts of other local fruits that they can get their hands on in the wintertime. So one of the reasons we don't see warblers in the winter is because they need insects, and in the winter there aren't really any insects available, so they have to go south. But a few warblers can actually stick around. So that said, it does make it hard to attract them with food, but if you want to attract warblers, I would suggest putting out, first of all, a water feature. If you have just even a little bird fountain, any kind of water is often really attractive to birds, and that can bring in birds that aren't necessarily attracted to seed. The other thing I might do is look into planting plants that are good for the kinds of insects that they like to eat. So you can, this is a bigger topic, but planting plants in your garden that are local to your environment, often they host local insects, and those insects are often very attractive to birds that don't necessarily eat birds. And I've learned in my garden, I plant a lot of local plants here, and you're really sort of insect farming as much as you are gardening. So, for example, when you put out a big fennel patch, you get black swallowtail that eat that. If you put out milkweed, you get monarch butterflies. So it can be a lot of fun to work on your garden with that in mind, and that may bring in some warblers.
That is really good advice. And I was just thinking, as you were talking, I was thinking about my my own bird bath actually attracts a lot of insects to get a drink.
That's right. And then in turn, you've got birds. I mean, anywhere there's food, there's going to be, the birds are always attracted to the food. So if there's bugs, there's going to be birds.
Cynthia in Racine has a question. Hi, Cynthia.
Hello. And thank you for the Xenocanto reference.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up on a farm, and my grandmother and father would both take us on walks and identify birds in the woods so we can learn this. I would like to be able to do something similar with my grandchildren. And there was a man here in Racine for a short time who had uploaded bird sounds from someplace onto an MP3 player that would take walks in the woods and then wait for some birds to call back. Is there a reference I can use starting out with my young grandchildren to do something like this?
Yeah, there are actually several apps that do that, that play songs. And they actually, I can't remember the name of it. There's an interesting book, actually, now that has a little scanner that will play back bird songs for you when you scan it. But the apps that are out there, there's one called Bird Tunes. Also, the Sibley Guide app has actually many of the songs that are in Bird Tunes. So if you have that app, you can actually play back songs for a specific bird. Now, the issue with that is that you can look up a bird by species and then play its song. But what do you do if you hear a song and you're not sure what species it is?
Yeah.
And that can be really tricky. We've created a system for that for warblers. And actually, we're working on more systems for that for other kinds of birds because we think it's really important to have. But the first thing you do in that case is you try to listen, like I was saying before, applying some vocabulary. So you're saying, well, Is that a one-part song or a two-part song? Or is that buzzy or is that clear? And when you do that with our Warbler Guide app, if it's a warbler, you'll definitely be able to narrow it down to what bird you're hearing. For other birds, it still helps a lot to actually start thinking about it in those terms, but it's going to help to see them then because you'll have to see them before you can find it in one of those apps and play the song back. Does that answer your question? I hope that was what you asked.
Yes, that helps a great deal. I need to do some library research then.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks sure. a lot for calling. And, yeah, pick up a copy of Scott's app if you have an iPhone. And when do you think the other version will be available?
The Android version we're hoping will be available in a couple of months.
Okay.
And so we're hoping that'll be out. And actually, we're working on another app now that we're also really excited about. And we're still in the final stages of production with that. But this app would actually allow you to identify birds by sound. And actually, it works a lot like Shazam or SoundHound. So it's not one of those programs, but it actually works in a similar way in that if you hear a song, you can actually point the phone at that singing bird and press a button, and it'll tell you what bird it is. So I'm hoping that'll be useful to the last caller, to identifying birds that they're hearing. And we're, like I said, we're getting very close to having that ready for production. So hopefully that'll be out in the next few months.
Wonderful, wonderful. Again, Cynthia, thank you so much. Eric in Madison up next. Hi, Eric. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. I just wanted to, the last conversation was really interesting because I had a lot more points that just popped into my head. But the original one is talking about the association with bird calls and sort of mnemonics, kind of like the chickadee dee dee and who cooks for you for the owls. I mean, I think that was a really, really good point, and that's really helped me for in my ornithology classes over the my undergrad years, and that was a really cool point. But I also wanted to, and I'm really looking forward to your release of your Warbler app for Android, because that was always a struggle for me identifying warblers, just so many that come through the state. But also the last point I wanted to bring up is when the previous caller had mentioned something about having an app that can repeat the calls. Some of the ethics of playing an app that has a bird call on it, especially during breeding seasons, and how that could add to, I don't know, maybe some problems with territoriality and things like that. And so I just wanted to
bring that up.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring it up so that if, people are using it to identify, that's great. Put your earphones in and identify, but maybe don't use it to try to call in birds.
Yeah, you brought up one of the more controversial subjects in birding, and it's definitely a little bit thorny. I think I agree with you that the birder, as someone who loves birds, my first priority is to not harm them or do anything that might make them, less productive and where they are and so on and so forth. And I think with calls, it's very much a issue of when and where, because I think you're right. If a bird is on a breeding territory, it's probably not a great idea to play calls at them, because they are already established on their territory. They're trying to defend against other competitive birds in their area. They're also trying to attract a mate. So you sort of waste their time probably by playing a song at them, and their time is valuable since they're only here for a short time to breed and molt and then return back to the south. So I totally agree with you on that. I think with migrating birds that are passing through your area, playing a call at them is probably less intrusive. They may come to investigate or they may not. And if they're not on territory, then it's probably not going to do much harm. But if you don't know the difference, if you're not sure, then I would advise towards being more conservative and not playing calls back. I agree. Yep. That's a very important point. I'm glad you brought that up.
Thanks again, Eric, for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Ron in Milwaukee a chance to join us as well. Ron, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I just have a question with regard to like an analogy between the house mouse and the house sparrow. The house sparrow has a very monotonous call, and does the increase in temperature, controls the chirping of the house sparrow? It's a very monotonous chirp, and are they analogous to the house mouse as a pest in the bird world, which I read at one point, and also in Jackson's Mammals of Wisconsin, they say that they actually taught a house mouse to sing. So that's kind of interesting.
I would love to hear that.
Yeah, me too.
That's cool. I think that house sparrows and European starlings were introduced to this country in the 1800s. It's a story where there was actually someone who wanted to introduce all the birds that were mentioned in Shakespeare into the North America. So this is at a time when we probably weren't thinking about ecological consequences necessarily. And so they released a number of these birds in Central Park. And as a result, for example, we have European starlings now all over the country. And, I don't have a grudge against any bird. I think, house sparrows are just as good as anything else. The only issue that people have with them, I think, is because they're a non-native species, they can be quite aggressive about their nesting areas. I've even heard stories of them killing, for example, bluebirds and other birds in their nests in order to sort of defend their territory, the house sparrow's perceived territory. So they can be destructive to native birds. So I think that's the main area where people are concerned about them. Ironically, in England, actually, house sparrows are decreasing rather precipitously. So we have, a lot of house sparrows here, but they're where they're native, actually, they're actually decreasing quite a bit. So, yeah, it's controversial. I never feel upset with any individual bird, though, because I love birds. You can't blame the house sparrow for being a house sparrow. But no. It can be a difficult problem if they're kicking out native species.
Well, it is. It does get frustrating sometimes to see at your feet are 20 house sparrows and no other birds.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It gets a little frustrating sometimes for me, I know.
It can be.
Yeah, and for others as well. A question from Judy wondered about lawn. If you're treating your lawns for weeds, which I don't know, but she wonders about the effect on the birds that are going to come to your yard.
Well, I think the main effect is about insect life. So in this country, we have an attitude about our yards, which I think is a little counterproductive to attracting birds and supporting wildlife. First of all, we're very fond of our lawns, and I don't have anything against lawns. I have a lawn in my yard. But in terms of productivity for birds, it's basically a zero. It's sort of equivalent of paved concrete in terms of what it produces, because many grasses are not native and there are very few insects that the birds can use that come out of the lawns. So I like to balance my lawn by planting, like I said, native plants and other plants that will attract insects so that they have some other resource to find food in my yard, because I want them to come to my yard. And as far as weed spraying, I think I can't imagine, you know, the lawn, like I said, is already fairly unproductive for insects, so it probably won't do much harm. Also, many of those weeds may be non-native as well. If you start, I have a friend here in Cape May who's doing a survey of all the plants of Cape May, and he looked at a lawn area and found 50 species approximately in about 2 feet of lawn, and none of them were actually native species. So the problem is non-native species is bugs don't use them because they haven't evolved with them here to use the plant. You know, most native plants have evolved alongside insects, so the insects have a host plant and they can eat it. But with something like a lawn, the insects can't use it because the lawn is from Asia or somewhere like that, so they can't use that grass. So yeah, I wouldn't worry too much, but I might counterbalance it by planting some native plants and see if that helps attract insects for the birds to balance it out a little bit.
That's I think that's a wonderful idea, and thanks again for that comment. And Scott, here we're starting to run out of time here, but I want to first thank you. But let's go back over again for people who may have joined in late. Talk about your app and how it's organized and what how people can use it.
Well, so the Warbler Guide app is a companion to our book, The Warbler Guide, and it's really meant to take into the field on your phone or your device and help you identify a bird in the field. So it has a finder, which shows you all the pictures of the birds, and then you can use a filter and say, well, okay, I saw a bird with a yellow head and a black belly, and it's singing a buzzy song. So you can combine audio and visual, and it'll actually just show you the birds that have those qualities. So that's one great thing. The other thing is it has those 3D birds we were talking about, which are really excellent because you can turn the bird to the angle you're looking at. It's actually a 3D model of the bird that's photorealistic. So you can turn it, and you can even compare two at the same time. So you can actually show two birds at once and rotate them simultaneously. That's really cool. The other thing our app does that we haven't talked much about, actually, is it plays all the songs for every warbler species, and it has a complete list of their songs. It also shows the sonograms for those songs, which are actually pictures of the sound, and that can be very helpful when you're trying to figure out what bird is singing and also in comparing and learning about songs. So those three are, our big three features of the app, and I hope that it's really helpful to people when they're out this fall looking for warblers migrating south.
Well, it's really a great idea, and you've done a marvelous job with it. And again, just you go to the app store and pick it up, pretty much, eh?
I hope so. Yep, get two for your friends.
Scott, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate having you on the air.
Thank you, Larry. It's been wonderful.
Scott Whittle has lots of experience as a professional photographer and educator. He is a one-time New York State Big Year record holder, and he is the author, along with Tom Stevenson, of The Warbler Guide, the book, and then The Warbler Guide app. And I hope you'll take a look at it. It really is an amazing app, and you may well want to get a copy of it. Well, we're going to turn our attention to other matters today and talk a little bit with you about energy and climate change, always kind of timely topics. These are issues that are very important to us, and there's a book out that I think you're really going to enjoy. It's called Geofuels, Energy and the Earth. Alan Carroll from the University of Wisconsin is the author, and he's our guest next, coming up on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.